morning, everyone.
Good morning, David.
Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Soon after I woke up, I felt a cold coming on, and I had been fighting off some kind of viral infection when I was up in Maple Ridge last week. And I realized that as I had this introduction of the idea of being sick, and there's an old pattern inside of my mind that began to accept this. And thinking, oh, will I be able to come down to Seattle today? And I immediately caught the thought. And I thought, why should I accept this? Sri Yukteswar said that an unwelcome, unacknowledged guest soon leaves. So I put it into my mind and I rejected the idea. I didn't accept it. And then I opened myself from the medulla, and I felt a flood of life energy come into those parts that felt affected. First, my brain that was receiving this idea, and then my body and various parts that were feeling some of the illness coming on, some of the achiness and some of the fatigue, some of the scratchy throat, and so on. And as I felt that life energy flow through me, I felt it sweeping away any notion of being ill. And so this leads into the topic of the day, which is around prosperous you. Reading from the latest journal that we have put out and the Dear Friends, throughout much of the world today, there is an economic downturn. It is interesting to note how much the financial markets are influenced by faith and fear. In fact, faith and fear are dual motivators for so much of what we do. However, for a truly successful life, fear must be mastered. It is easy to understand why fear exists. When a threat is perceived, nature has designed fear to excite the body and mind into action, reacting with what behaviorists have called the fight or flight response. In addition to these two responses to perceived danger, I have added a third reaction, a freeze. Seeing a predator, a deer in the woods does not move a muscle. It is passively receptive in hearing and seeing, but the heart is wildly pumping and all of its biology is ready for fight or flight, all the while hoping that the predator will not see it and the danger will pass by without incident. Short-term fear can pump adrenaline into the body and create a high state of readiness that will make the difference in life or death situations. We have read the account of a father lifting the back end of a truck where a child is trapped, an act that would normally be impossible for one man to do. So nature was wise to design this feature into the human race. With such powerful responses built into the factory of human body, one can seem to be a helpless victim of biology's autonomic responses. In a Newsweek Science article dated December 24th, 2007, Sharon Begley writes, "The evolutionary primacy of the brain's fear circuitry makes it more powerful than the brain's reasoning faculties. The amygdala sprouts a profusion of connections to higher brain regions. Neurons that carry one-way traffic from the amygdala to the neocortex. Few connections run from the neocortex to the amygdala, however. That allows the amygdala to override the products of the logical, thoughtful cortex, but not vice versa. That makes fear far, far more powerful than reason," says neurobiologist Michael Fancillo of the University of California, Los Angeles. And then I continue, "Despite this one-way street of communication, however, humankind has been endowed with higher potential than purely animalistic responses of the amygdala. It is a false conclusion that the higher mind cannot control impulses of fear generated by the lower mind. Columbia University researchers using MRI technology has identified a more accurate picture regarding the fear response. A Science Daily article, 2006, states, Dr. Joy Hirsch explained that this previous finding suggested that subjects were somehow able to control their conscious emotional responses, but that their unconscious responses may be more automatic. Following the discovery of the amygdalas located deep in the temporal lobes, the amygdala's role in fear response, we decided to explore the finer points of the neural circuitry of fear, how it is regulated and controlled in the brain. This new paper adds important regulatory circuit information about the fear response in the amygdala," said Dr. Hirsch. For example, if someone is walking on an empty street at night and hears a loud banging noise in the near distance, the amygdala would immediately light up. But instead of always running in the opposite direction from the sound, the rostral cingulate, located in the frontal lobe region, determines if action is needed or not. For example, if it was a car door slamming, the rostral cingulate would shut down the amygdala. And I continue. The higher mind and the frontal lobe of the brain, the rostral cingulate, determines whether there needs to be a response of fight, flight, or freeze, or not react at all. This ability to turn off the messages from the amygdala is a crucial fact, for one can learn to control what can be thought of as a more elementary or lower impulse of the brain. One can become a master of fear and other sense-driven impulses. A spiritual master is one who has learned to direct the life force, or prana, away from the body sensations and lift it into the higher functions of the brain, even into states of realization, as defined by the ancient yoga texts of India. Paramahansa Yogananda likened this ability to a telephone operator in an old-fashioned switchboard. The operator would pull out the plug to disconnect the call. Just so, the yogi hangs up the call from the sense stimuli, in this case, from the amygdala. Generalized fear and anxiety comes about when reports about distant events trigger a fear response, without any balancing measures from the higher brain functioning of the neocortex to say that all is safe. The more general the information, and the more frequently it is heard or seen, the greater the anxiety, as the information goes almost unnoticed by the unconscious mind, or at least the cumulative effect can be unnoticed. When you listen to many newscasters, they specialize in putting a sense of urgency in their voices and presentation. Yet, we know that a news item can be a cause célèbre today, presented with flourish and tension, but then disappears a little while later, oftentimes without any clear resolution. Fear can become pervasive in the body, and we can find ourselves always on the run. Yet, where can we escape this feeling of tension? Unfortunately, fear sells. If you want to promote a product or an idea, you make it an emergency, life or death, no time for reasoning. You must act now. To counteract this assault of the senses and the calculated response from those who want to push you to decide, we must become masters of the brain. We must develop higher reasoning and intuition. The reasoning mind can definitely help you progress. In behavioral psychology, the idea is that you can train the mind to use the neocortex to turn off the amygdala by building up tolerance. The behavioral psychologist will expose you to a stimulus that creates an irrational fear, only in a very small dose. Once tolerance in the neocortex is built up on a small dose, the intensity is increased until you respond within a normal range. Beyond this type of training of the mind, there are even more refined ways to create a feeling of safety and even profound states of peace. A gateway to this higher experience is faith. Faith, being the opposite of fear, focuses the mind on elements that transcend the senses and the immediate demands of the lower mind. Faith in a divine providence means that you trust in the omniscience of God, and that God is assuring you, protecting you, and guiding you ultimately to a positive end. Absolute trust and surrender to God gives you surpassing peace and a positive outlook on the events of this world and your part in it. Faith, as Jesus spoke of it, goes beyond a hope or a wish. It penetrates deeply into the mind. It leads to a knowingness that opens the tremendous potential of sacred power. This power provides the healing of body, mind, and spirit. It attunes you to a guiding intelligence that leads you through life's most complex problems, giving you the assurance that you are loved completely. There isn't a day that you don't stand at the Y in the road. In one direction lies fear and its relatives of lack, paranoia, jealousy, isolation, greed, and an endless lust to possess and control. In the other direction is the path of faith, which brings with it openness, peace, guiding wisdom, joy, and a sure feeling of union with God. And you choose, consciously or unconsciously, every day, every hour, and every moment, on which road you will travel. This world has its shares of uncertainties, economic woes, threats of violence and acts of terrorism, illness and loneliness. Fear does not prepare us for these difficulties. In fact, fear exacerbates them. With financial downturns, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Fear restricts creativity and options, contracting the flow of supply. Faith is the antidote. Use each challenge as an opportunity to draw more deeply from the deep well of living waters and always that are always flowing to you. Pray and listen with an open heart and mind. Meditate more deeply until you find a peace of soul that lifts you past transitory difficulties and opens the flow of prosperity to you on every level. In finding this peace and prosperity from within you, you are now established in a divine harmony that will be with you always, even when this vast universe and its ups and downs are just a memory. This topic on prosperity is a vast one, but it really gets down to something quite simple within your soul and within your mind. I was speaking to someone on the phone yesterday, And we are talking about this very topic, prosperity. This individual was having some difficulties. They wanted to decorate their home. And they wanted something beautiful in order to decorate it with. But finances didn't seem to allow. And as this individual was speaking about this, they began to cry because they felt that there wasn't enough, that they always had to go with the bargain brand, that they weren't very beautiful, that they weren't very nice, and that there was a feeling of desperation, there's a feeling of being bereft in all of this. This idea that God supplies us is something that was very strongly promoted by Jesus. He talked about the birds of the air, about the flowers in the field, and how God supplied all that they needed during their lifetime. And that you, being more than the birds of the air or the flowers in the field, that God would surely supply you as well. When Master came to America, he spoke about prosperity, he talked about positive attitude, and most of all, he talked about attuning the mind to God, and that through God was a superior power to all the different difficulties that you have to go through. Now, he came in the 1920s, and as we know, in the late 1920s and early 1930s, the world and the United States entered into a period of a Great Depression. And so you can imagine the fear, you can imagine the difficulty of those times. Now, this current economy has been compared to the Great Depression, but really, we're nowhere near it at this point. And yet, there is a saying that a recession is when your neighbor loses his job, and a depression is when you lose your job. That's how the definition goes. And so it is a matter of perspective. And if you are living in a town in which there has been an economic downturn, and shops are closing up, and people have lost their jobs, and it can be quite something to have to live with. And there's a kind of group energy that begins, a group consciousness that begins to develop around that. Fear begins to take over. A feeling of hopelessness begins to take over. Well, as in the outer, so in the inner. So as I was talking to this individual on the telephone about prosperity, it was clear that even though she wanted more, inwardly, emotionally, she didn't feel that she could really have more. That all of her emotions inside said no, even though she mentally wanted more. So this is the place that many people end up in. And some people try positive thinking and affirmation, some to great effect, and others not. And you have to question, why does it work for some and not for others? And you can look at the basic underlying psychology of an individual, and it will tell you the difference. Some people feel that the good things can flow to them, the prosperity can flow to them. Other people look around at their lives, and they don't feel they can sit at the banquet table with everyone else. Inside, they feel that they are beggars, that they are perhaps sitting on the floor hoping for a few crumbs to fall from the table, where everyone else is eating and they are alone or perhaps with a group of others, of like-minded individuals, and nothing is good for them. Nothing can flow their way, really, except for these few crumbs. Now, when you look back over these last couple thousand years, we went through this Kali Age, and it was a difficult time, a very difficult time. And during that time, there were famines. There were times of lack. In fact, today we live in a time of unparalleled prosperity. most of us are subject and have an ability to acquire more than royalty did in the past, just in terms of conveniences, of food variety, all kinds of things. And it's really remarkable, the kind of prosperity that we live with today. But we don't always feel that way, you see, because we compare ourselves to our neighbor, or we always have what will happen in the future. Will I be all right? I'm okay today, but will I be all right tomorrow, you see? And that fear begins to close you down. Now, if I ask you to direct your mind to the spine, and if I told you that there is a constant supply flowing to you from behind you, and then I were to ask you how open, really, not how open you think you should be, but how open are you to this flow of supply always flowing to you? Number one, supply of spirit, of uplifting feelings, of light, of transformative thought and life energy. How open are you to that? How open are you to mental prosperity, positive thought, divinely inspired thought, positively charged thought? And what is your sense of that? How open are you to that? Do you feel open or closed? I want you to take a reality check here just in a moment as we talk about this. And then in your heart, how open are you in your heart? If there is a flow of divine feeling, of love, of compassion, of peace, constantly flowing to you in your heart center, how open do you feel to that flow? And then down to your will center. And your will center being highly attuned to God's will, to the sixth center, even as Arjuna was highly attuned to Krishna. And how attuned, how open do you feel to the life energy? If I told you there was an infinite supply, an unending supply, without limit, how open do you feel to this? And then to the lower centers for both physical health and the supply that comes from there, and also material prosperity and all your good coming to you and flowing to you. If I were to tell you that inside of you is a powerful magnet that can either be positively or negatively charged, even as a material magnet can be, and that if you are positively charged, you will draw all your good to you, and if you are negatively charged, you will repel that which you desire most from you, not because it doesn't belong to you, not because God did not intend it for you, but because you are giving direction from within, that you do not deserve and want this. And so you repel it, you push it away. Now we are designed to walk in the Garden of Eden in the divine presence with God always, to walk in attunement. That what we learn from the story of Adam and Eve is that they went against God's will. They deliberately went against God's will, and when they did, they were afraid, they were ashamed, and they hid from God. And so in order to reclaim that kingdom, we need to reverse this. We need to open ourselves. We need to become beings of light, beings of prosperity, beings that are completely and totally attuned with God. And so as you do this assessment within you and you see how open or how closed you are at each one of these centers, if you could think about even incrementally opening yourself so that you are a complete and total instrument for the divine consciousness, you are not restricting it and you are not repelling it. Now, for that, we have to make our lives And that includes our thoughts and our feelings, an open book to God. We can't be reserved. We can't hold back any particular thing for ourselves. Because, you see, that restricts the supply. That restricts the grace that is constantly flowing to you. And so you make yourself that, and you willingly submit yourself to the divine will with total trust and total faith. Because faith opens the doors. You trust, and you have faith in the fact that whatever God gives to you is perfect for you. That includes your outer and inner conditions. And that if you have anything that is difficult within you, in the body in terms of illness or lack of life energy, in pain, God did not design you that way. Open yourself to that complete and total supply coming to you to sweep away this negativity, this pain, this constriction. That God desires for you to be happy, to surround yourself with beauty. Now that is different for everybody. Some people come into this world with large tasks, large responsibilities in a material way. And so they have a need for greater properties. They have great need for greater houses and so on. And that is all right. That is between that individual and God. Other people don't need such outward demonstrations. They are happy with something similar, simpler. It's easier to clean, easier to maintain. They're all right with that. There's no feeling of lack. It's not done for lack. There's a movement today, and it's a very strong movement, and it's a feeling that mankind is some kind of a plague upon the earth. And that we, what we use and what we do in this world is by definition wrong and evil. This is a complete cynicism of the mind. It is not how God designed us. It is not how God designed this world. Now, we need clean air. We need clean water. We need to live in harmony with nature's rules and God's. But we should not think that we have to become less in order for this world to be all right or for God's will to be expressed. What we need is divine attunement. Not to become less, but to become more. And so you open yourself to become more. You are a living conduit for prosperity, don't you see? Through you, through the spirit that you bring, through the creative thought that you have, through the loving compassion that you express, through the divinely attuned will, through the health and through the prosperity that you attract, you draw to you and add to this world. You don't subtract from it. And when we live in harmony with that, then we are all divine instruments. And what we bring is beauty and love and truth. So the idea is not for us to become less and to reduce ourselves. The idea is to live in divine harmony and express ourselves with unending possibilities. There is a tremendous amount of energy within one atom. Within your body and the constellation of your body, there is tremendous energy there. And so as we think how to meet the energy problems of this world and the demands in this world, we think of increasing supply and to tap into clean, healthy energy. It's all around us. It abounds. And the key is to have the creative minds that will learn how to tap into these things, you see. So we learn to meet problems not by becoming less, but by growing toward them, expanding beyond them, becoming more than whatever limitations we are presently encountering. It's a positive, creative, and fun attitude. And when we enter into life in this way, we become prosperous. Prosperous spiritually, mentally, emotionally, willfully, bodily, and materially. We open ourselves to that complete and total supply. I recently gave a class on the prosperous you. In the back, I included something. It came from the Reader's Digest. But it's 10 reasons to be thankful. And gratitude is certainly close to being attuned to God, because any time, and I think all of you can attest to this, any time you feel close to God, you do feel thankful. You do feel gratitude. This is by John Tierney. Count your blessings, we're told, but it's not in our nature. We'd rather count our problems. Our species survived by reacting instantly to threats, and the ancient humans who stopped to smell the roses made easier targets for predators. Today, the predators are mostly gone, but we're still so primed to pay attention to bad news that we tend to ignore what's going well. As soon as we solve one problem, we take the progress for granted and find a new cause for alarm. Isn't that the truth? Every now and again, it doesn't hurt to take stock of just how good we have it. Start counting. Number one, free time. As much as we complain about being busy, the typical American has more free time than ever more than 5 hours per day. According to time surveys by the U.S. Census Bureau and researchers at the University of Maryland and Penn State, that's a gain of nearly an hour since 1965, and a gain of about 4 hours since the 19th century. In Victorian England, when life expectancy was only about 50, workers put in 60 hours per week from age 10 until they died. If you feel too busy, it's probably only because you're doing so many other things than work. Over the course of a lifetime, you typically spend no more than 20% of your waking hours on the job. And experts say that there will be even more free time in the future as life expectancy keeps increasing and work hours keep shrinking. Peace. Wars and terrorist attacks will always make headlines, but it's remarkable how many of the world's 6.7 billion people now live in peace. In recent decades, despite the growth in population, the number of war casualties around the world has declined. According to the Human Security Report Project from Canada's Simon Fraser University, and despite a new fear of terrorism following 9/11, terrorist casualties have actually been declining in recent years. In some earlier generations, a quarter of the male population died violent deaths. A quarter. Over the past century, even counting the world wars, a person's chance of dying from war or violent civil strife was less than 2%, according to John Mueller, a professor of political science at Ohio State University. That means that the scourge of war is now comparable to the statistical risk of driving a car in the United States. A roomier American dream. While some people are struggling to keep their homes, the vast majority of Americans still have plenty to be thankful for when they walk through the front door. In 1950, the typical new home, American house, had one floor with 1,000 square feet, two bedrooms, and one bathroom, and even that bungalow was beyond many people's dreams. Nearly half of Americans didn't own their homes, and more than a third of homes lacked complete plumbing facilities. Today, more than two-thirds of Americans own their own homes, and the typical house has two floors and at least three bedrooms, two and a half baths, and more than 2,200 square feet of space for the family. The Reader's Revolution. In 1970, barely half the people in the world were literate, and many of them could afford only a few books. Middle-class people needed installment payments to afford an encyclopedia. Local libraries offered a limited selection of books. New titles went on sale in bookstores, but soon disappeared unless they were bestsellers. Today, more than 80% of the world's people can read, and 22% have access to the greatest library in the world. The web provides classic books and reference works like Wikipedia free of charge, and the online network of bestsellers means that no book ever really goes out of print. Whatever it is, old or new, someone somewhere will sell it to you, often at a bargain price. The Horn of Plenty. The royal diners at Versailles might have had a glitzier place settings, but Louis XVI would gaze enviously at the food in a middle-class home or restaurant today. Kiwi fruits from New Zealand, South African peppers, Thai pineapples, Italian gelato. He'd be amazed, too, at the way we take fresh produce, fish, and meat for granted in every season. I'm going to skip over some of this. More wilderness. Once you travel beyond the sprawling exurbs of America, you will find plenty of open space and peaceful forests. Many of the prairies and woodlands cleared by settlers have returned now that land that is no longer needed for agriculture. In recent decades, America has gained 70 million acres of wilderness, which is more than all the land currently occupied by cities, suburbs, and exurbs, according to Peter Huber, a fellow at Manhattan Institute. More people than ever can get into the wilderness because of technology that we now routinely curse. The modern automobile. Granted, cars emit greenhouse gases and create maddening traffic jams, but consider what else they do. Compared with the models on the road in 1970, today's car burns less gasoline per mile and emit 98% fewer pollutants. That's why, despite the doubling of the number of cars, there's so much less smog in the air. A basic sedan today offers more creature comforts and safety than luxury cars of old. The fatality rate has declined sharply, and cars have become so reliable that it is rare to come upon that once routine sight on the shoulder of the road, a driver forlornly staring under the hood. The platinum age of television. Forget the so-called golden age of TV. Shows from the 50s look so positively primitive compared with Mad Men, 30 Rock, or The Amazing Race. When a few networks had to appeal to the lowest common denominator, television really was a wasteland, just as Hollywood so often churns out mediocrity when it's aiming for box office blockbusters. With hundreds of channels today, TV producers don't have to please everyone, so they can appeal to niche audiences with quirky programs, sophisticated dramas, edgy comedies, and documentaries that just aren't educational but riveting. When children are happily learning about Mayan engineering on the History Channel or quasars on the Discovery Channel, that box is no longer the boob tube. Retreat from Armageddon. During the Cold War, the United States and former Soviet Union had about 50,000 nuclear warheads aimed at each other. Since then, they have agreed to get rid of 90% of them, and tens of thousands of those weapons have already been eliminated. As Greg Easterbrook observes in his book, The Progress Paradox, historians will view nuclear arms reduction as such an incredible accomplishment that it will seem bizarre in retrospect, so little attention was paid while it was happening. Memories. The gift of a longer life has been accompanied by loss of memories, but we'll be luckier than our grandparents. Besides new memory-improving drugs being developed, we get digital photos, videos, and emails to recall our best personal moments and the web to instantly help us remember who sang that song or which year the blizzard hit. In the past, only nobles could hire scribes to write their histories and artists to depict their deeds. Today, we all have records of our lives to pass on to our descendants, to comfort us as we age, and to remind us every now and then to count our blessings. I think there's many thought-provoking ideas in here and may challenge some of our cherished notions. I urge you to oftentimes take a temperature check on yourself to run up and down the spine and see how open you are to your prosperity, that you count your blessings, that you have a life of gratitude, and that you know that God designed you to, number one, live in harmony with Him, and number two, to live a life of prosperity on every level of existence. Do not give in to fear, but live in faith and a knowingness that God is present with you and supplying you always, supplying you with comfort, with inspiration, with creative ideas, with love, with compassion, with good health, and all good prosperity flowing to you now. Become the prosperous you and live in that field of infinite potentiality, never knowing the end of God's magnificence and all the ways that He gives to us. If you pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. I bow to the light of God within each of you. May He make you know His presence and always be flowing to you in great abundance. Om Tat Sat.